Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to talk about economy. We started a couple hours into this part of the series on nations and nation building. And the economy is probably one of the essential parts of any nation. But what is economy? How does one form an economy that is stable? Evidently, they don't know how to do that because every single nation in the world is now operating in the red. And everybody born to those nations are born in debt. Thousands and thousands of dollars in debt in the United States. $50,000 more in debt, climbing rapidly. Other countries have even higher debts. And you find yourself, according to the GOA, I think it's GOA, Government Accounting Office, GAO, they, by the year 2020, the amount of time that you're going to have to work to pay off your debt is over 90% of your life. 90% of your working day is going to take to pay off the debt. And the problem is that nobody's trying to pay it off. It's just getting greater and greater and greater. Because they've created a certain kind of economic system that lends itself to everybody going into debt because debt is a way of controlling you. And, if you ask me, because there's a spirit alive and well in mankind, living in the hearts and minds of men, that is a destructive spirit, a spirit that wants to destroy specifically man. And in order to do it, that spirit must get man to destroy himself, must get man to commit suicide. And somebody was just telling me, somebody, a singer or something, just was found dead from suicide. And I guess they were a successful singer and making lots of money, and they killed themselves. And not too long ago, we heard about someone else, Robin Williams, a very successful person. His popularity might have been waning a little bit from the multimillionaire that he was, but he still had a lot of career ahead of him, much younger than myself, and he kills himself. What is this destructive spirit? How many times have you heard about somebody who kills everybody in his family and then kills himself? How many shooters who go out to kill people in the malls and schools and places like that are killing everybody, and when they're finally confronted with a force such as someone who actually has a gun, they turn their gun on themselves and kill themselves? It's a self-destructive spirit. It wants men to destroy men, destroy themselves. And it possesses us. It takes control of us. Makes us do crazy things. And we do crazy things as a society, and we've done them throughout history. And one of the crazy things that we do is we don't study history. So we don't know that we're doing crazy things because we don't learn from history and we repeat the same mistakes. And we started this series, like I said, several hours ago, but we had two broadcasts already on this series. And we talked about the New Spring Church that collects $50 million, and only $4 million actually goes to the poor, less than 10%. And there's actually places that will, you know, look at different charities and determine how much of your charitable dollar actually goes to charity and how much is just going to a huge staff that's out there trying to get more and more money. And then we also pointed out pastors who claim to be going on the missions and building orphanages and all this stuff and collect $8 million to do it, and personally collects $8 million by going to church, got a great slideshow, ask for donations, get $8 million in donations. Never a dime went to an orphanage. Had no orphanages he was building, he put together this slideshow. He'd gone to Africa and got pictures of himself, you know, selfies of him out there with the poor people, but he never was doing anything for them. It was a total con. Got away with it for years and years, and they never did recover all the money. They don't even know what happened to it all. He said it was all gone. Yeah, right. It's in some locker somewhere, some bank account somewhere, and he's not going to tell you where it is. You know, I know somebody who has, you know, $1 million worth of gold stashed away. And we kind of uncovered it. He joined our network, pretended to be very poor, got a coat out of us because he didn't have a coat. Oh, I don't have a coat. Actually, he's got a tremendous amount of money hidden away. And we figured out where it was. And suddenly everybody that was a part of him jumped off the network. But we actually have, you know, because our network is an extended network, we actually know he was going around to other houses and other homes doing the same thing, poor, you know, living like this poor person. And they actually had all kinds of money. All kinds of money. Way more money than I've ever had. And he's just duping people. And they're easily duped. Because they don't exercise the responsibility of being a free people, which is economy. Economy of your donations. Now, Christ talks about people giving 50% of everything they have, and they want to do more, and he says, give up all. Come follow me. Well, actually, his disciples didn't own anything. I mean, they did at the beginning, but eventually they gave up all. They owned nothing in their own name. And they held all things in common, which was why the church was able to go and sue the government of the world to return property they had stolen from the church generations after they had stolen it and years before Constantine supposedly legalized Christianity. How in the heck are they going into court demanding the return of church property in national courts before Constantine, if the church was illegal? The church wasn't illegal. The church was lawful. The church was a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire, established by Jesus Christ, the King of Judea, the rightful King of Judea. So saith Pontius Pilate, this is the King of the Jews, this is the King of the Jews, this is the King of the Jews. This is what the case was. The Christians, the Jews that followed Christ, and all those other people who were not Jews, other Gentiles who were not Jews, but followed Christ, were literally a nation within nations. They were a separate government, but a republic. The leaders of that government, the apostles, and other leaders of that government, such as Paul, did not exercise authority one over the other. It was a government of service, not a government of power. How do you get that? Stop trying to exercise power over your neighbor. Stop trying to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. Depend on faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. That's what sets you free. That's the liberty of Christ. And it's an actual institution. And in order to have standing in the law of nations, the ministers of the church had to own all things in common. The people owned their own stuff, but the ministers had to own all things in common. What was given to them by the people, for the people, in the name of Christ, they held in trust for Christ. And that gave them standing in the law of nations. In order to keep that standing in the law of nations pure, they had to give up all their rights and benefits in any other government, because you cannot serve two masters. That's what we're showing people how to do today, in the world, but not of the world. That is what the true church looks like. And it has an economy. And we've taken this to top lawyers in the United States and showed them what we're doing. They were blown away. They were actually surprised. And one of them was, you know, both of them were religious men. But one of them was, you know, very studious in the Bible. Comes from a religious group that studies the Bible in great detail. Has for centuries. One of my own great-grandfathers was a minister in such a religion. I won't mention his name, but we mention who these attorneys were, and we have letters from them recognizing what we're doing is, you know, the validity of it. But the point is it's valid with Christ because it's conforming to Christ, and it has an economy, and people don't know how that is. There are many elements of these economies. So anyway, in the first shows, we talked about that and the corruption of churches and how they fool people. And how they unmoor the rituals of ancient people of the Bible, such as the Israelites and the early church. They unmoor their rituals so that you don't know why they were doing those things anymore. You go through the motions, like baptism. and you accomplish nothing. You're not getting baptized in the name of Jesus because you're not getting baptized in the character or in the way of Jesus. You're not changing your way. Your baptisms mean as much as the baptisms of the Christians of Milan. They just got baptized. They didn't repent. They didn't change their ways. And so we talked about the definition of economy, where the word comes from. And originally it comes from a Greek word that means household management. Because all society is created in the family, and the family is the core. God instituted the family. Man instituted governments. God allows man to institute governments, but he tells man, when you do institute these governments that exercise authority, they're going to take and take and take and take and take. You're going to cry out, and I'm not even going to hear you. That's what God says. God allows you to institute governments. He allows you to give them power. And once you give them power, they may have power, and you may have to do what they say. If you want to be free souls under God, you have to repent and start doing something different. And Christ was telling us what that was. You're going to have to manage your affairs, your economic affairs, differently than you were doing it before. So anyway, I just summed up those 2 hours. And so we talked a little bit about command-based economies, and we're going to talk more about that, give you more examples of that. We talked about how economic systems were born in places like Sumer and Babylon. And they began with something called commodity money. And commodity money is when you, like, you have an ounce of silver and it says an ounce of silver. That's a just weight and measurement. It's fine, 99.9 fine silver. So basically it's silver. And the Roman silver coins were something along those lines. More than 0.9. But they were reduced to 0.9. Actually, less than 0.9. They were produced, they went down even less than that with Mark Antony and Cleopatra. And then half of the silver was gone under Nero. Almost half. At least 40% of the silver was gone from a silver coin under Nero. And eventually they took it all out, and they had runaway inflation. And you're already seeing the beginnings of that in most nations. I mean, Israel today, you know, the modern state of Israel today, they've had iron coin for, you know, decades. And iron coin is not a just weight and measure. It's not a weight. It's a coin. It's stamped with a value. Somebody says it is worth this much. It's not about weights and measures. It's not commodity money. So they're in violation of their own Torah, officially in violation of their own Torah, and yet they call themselves Jews and Israelis and followers of Abraham. But they're doing contrary to what Moses said. They're not doing it. In the Bible, you actually see a quote in Leviticus 25:10, which is talking about economy, the money system. And it says, "And ye shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all of the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his possessions, and ye shall return every man unto his family." Back to that beginning, that origin, that principas, that original liberty, the family. And in the family, you own stuff. You know, I tell people this, talked about it at the Burning Bush Festival, that God is a capitalist. Yeah, he's a capitalist. And we'll talk more about that. But when he put you in the garden and gave you dominion and said, dress it and keep it, that's capitalism. You had a right to your labor, a right to the sweat of your brow and what the sweat of your brow produced. And you had a right to decide what to do with that. You were free souls under God. That's capitalism. Now, if you're selfish with what you produce, if you take advantage of other people and take away what they produce, that's not capitalism. That's just selfishness. And that's the problem with capitalism, is there's lots of selfish people practicing capitalism. Not that there aren't lots of selfish people practicing socialism. Certainly are, maybe even more so. It lends itself to that. But God is a capitalist. Capitalism is good. And that's why I wrote the article, The Ugly Capitalist, so that you can, you know, it's a bait and switch. I'm known to do that. But anyway, an economy or economic system consists of the production, distribution, or trade and consumption of limited goods and services by different agents in a given geographical location. Didn't say anything about selling. Did say distribution and trade. But it didn't necessarily mean you sold anything. You traded. They're still in that commodity consumption area. The economic agents can be individuals, businesses, organizations, or governments. So that's an important element of an economic system. And I use the word element there because we're going to talk about that in a minute. Transactions occur when two parties or more agree to the value or price of a transacted good or service, commonly expressed in certain currency. Didn't say coin yet, said currency. Didn't say cash, said currency. So anyway, that gives you an idea of what an economic system is. Now we're going to jump over to Galatians 4:3. Even so, we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. And the word elements there is stoikion. And it actually comes from a word that has to do with walking with, you know, moving with. But it has to do with, you know, the primary elements and origins of a thing. And so it says, under the elements of the world, and the word world there means constitutional order or system of government. So we were in bondage under those constitutional systems, like the constitutional system of Egypt. You were in bondage in Egypt. And people were going into bondage in Judea under the constitutional elements of Herod the Great, who drastically changed the system of social welfare in Judea, which had been based on free will offerings. And he now set up a system where you signed up and you were compelled. You freely signed up. You didn't have to sign up. It was voluntary to sign up. But once you signed up, you were expected to give in a percentage of your income, and it was enforceable by law, by the legal system. You see, because they gave identity to your right to receive. And they had a controlling, exercising authority to make sure that you contributed. It was now that your contributions were forced contributions, which is why they talk about until John the Baptist, everybody was doing this by force. They were doing the same thing in Rome. Now John the Baptist is saying you had to do it by sharing, by charity, by love of one another. And he was organizing another economic system based on this other principle, which we see in a number of religious groups, mostly what we call Essenes were doing this, in Judea. The Pharisees were following the ways that Herod had set up. And that system was called Corban. Just like the system that John the Baptist was setting up, it was called Corban too, but it was different because it was free will offerings. And the Corban set up by the Pharisees and Herod were forced offerings. And people liked it at first because the offerings weren't very big and they put in lots of money. And nobody could cheat, supposedly. You know, everybody had to pay their fair share. Nobody left behind. There you go. Nobody left behind. Galatians 4:9 says, "But now after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements?" That same word again. Elements, whereunto ye desire again to be in bondage. So again, we have to kind of wonder what those elements are. And part of those elements is the economy. Part of the elements is your social compact. There's several different elements, but they're talking about these elements of bondage. You see, Israel was in bondage because of a social compact and because of the nature of the economy in Egypt, which actually used grain as money. It also used clay scarabs as money. But anyway, in Colossians, we see the same word, but they don't translate it elements. In 2:8, they say, "Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the traditions of men," and that word traditions there has to do even with ordinances of men, because it can be translated that way, "after the rudiments of the world." Again, rudiments of the world. The word rudiments is the same word we see up in Galatians 4:3, the elements of the world. And we see also that word world is constitutional order or system or government. That's the way it's defined in Thayer's. So these elements are rudiments or fundamental principles of the governments of the world can somehow or other bring you into bondage. But the fundamental principles of Christ set you free. And they could finish Colossians with, "and not after Christ." In Colossians 2:20, just a few verses later, it says, "Wherefore, if ye be dead with Christ from the rudiments of the world." Remember, Christ was saying to live in that world, and he was using that word again, constitutional order or system of government, but not of that world. And he's saying dead with Christ from, separated with Christ from the world, because his kingdom was not of that world. And so you'd be dead to those rudiments. "Why, as though living in the world, ye are subject to ordinances." Oh, people always tell me we're not under the law anymore, but they are under the law. They're under the ordinances of whatever nation they're in. Now, we're all under laws like you can't kill and you can't rob and you can't steal, but there's a lot of other ordinances that you're under because you have made covenants with the governments where you go. And we've given you lots of examples in many countries where there are as much as 20% of the people that are not under such ordinances. They still can't rob and steal and all that stuff, but they are actually separate. They don't get the benefits of their government, you know, the actual special, you know, free education and health care and protection of certain types of employment laws and all this stuff. But they are virtually free in their society. And many countries allow this. And the gypsies get to, you know, gypsies in Germany get to homeschool their kids. But there's not a lot of gypsies in Germany. That hadn't been since World War II. Because besides killing the Jews, they killed the gypsies, a couple million of them. Because gypsies wouldn't, and this was the big crime. If you don't participate, Germany has no toleration for an alternate society. Christianity has always been that alternate society. Now, we also find the same word that we see as rudiments and we see as elements in Hebrews 5:12. For the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have needs that one teach you again, which be the first principles, elements, there's that word, principles, it's translated principles, of the oracle of God. So we're talking about these rudiments and principles and elements of the world, but we also have elements of the oracles of God. And they are evidently distinct. And he's saying you have need to be taught these things again because you've lost sight of them. And of course, that happens to be the case today because you're not getting them from your churches that collect $50 million and only $4 million go to the poor. It's ridiculous. You know, we're talking about a church doing that. $50 million, man. And how they do it. You know, emotional calls on the people of guilt and play games. See, the early church was collecting money, but they were taking care of all the social welfare of all the Christians. Not because there was not other social welfare around, there was plenty, but because those systems were based on men who exercised authority one over the other. And Christ had said in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it was not to be that way with you. So they had to take care of all the needy without applying, praying, seeking the benefits of that world, that constitutional order and system of government. They had to exercise pure religion and do it without appealing, without touching, without being spotted by the world. And so they literally developed their own economy, their own economic system within Rome, the Roman Empire. And as Rome collapsed, they thrived. And nobody's teaching you, like Hebrews 5:12 says, nobody's teaching you the principles of the oracles of God, except we will teach you. And he goes on to say, and are become such as have need of milk and not strong meat. You have to start somewhere. And of course, this is what we're showing you on the Living Network. And if you haven't joined the Living Network yet, if you haven't become a part of a congregation of record, then, you know, there's only so much I can do over the radio. You need to do that. Go to thelivingnetwork.org, go to preparingyou.com, go to His Holy Church, and join the network. So we'll take a little break, and we'll give everybody a chance to go and join the Living Network while you listen to the break. So anyway, we'll be right back.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hishollychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. And we were talking about that quote in Hebrews 5:12. Where it talks about the principles or rudiments or elements of the oracles of God as opposed to the elements, rudiments, and principles of the world, which is the system of men or the system of things. And it's the system that makes men a thing, makes mankind merchandise, brings them back into bondage, and the oracles of God sets men's free. So you want to know what those elements are, and one of those elements are found in the nature of your economy. 2 Peter 3:10 uses that same word again, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, and the earth also, and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Now, a lot of people talk about that being, you know, nuclear blasts, because they're talking about the elements. But that word elements there is the same word that we see in reference to constitutional orders and systems of government. It's the same word we see there in reference to the oracles of God, the principles of God, the elements of God. Are they really talking about melting atoms with a nuclear holocaust? Well, sometimes that may happen too. We just had an unbelievable explosion on the sun. Not as unbelievable as it could be. It was just an M-class flare. And we've had a proton flux event for the last week or so from the sun, causing a change in the environment in the Earth space environment. And I have people who watch this daily, and they thought it was all very unusual. And they're not sure exactly what it was. But an M-class flare is not a big thing. And I don't know that it's Earthbound. It's too early. I mean, it just happened in the last few minutes. But there will be X-class and mega flares that could change all life on the face of the earth. They happen, and they make big changes, and they can happen in a minute. But is that really what Peter's talking about? If you read all that, that's in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10, and you can read that. If you go on to verse 12, he uses the same word again. He says, looking for and hasting unto the coming day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat. So he again talks about that, and we think about the earth all melting down, and maybe he's talking about that, but if you read the whole context, it's beginning to think that he's talking about something else. In other words, if you were to have a coronal mass ejection that came and hit the earth that was a mega flare capacity, you know, not just an X class, but, you know, bigger than an X class, 10 times bigger than an X class. Anyway, we were talking about these elements, and these changes, and we know that changes can rot rapidly in a society, and in a society like what we have today, which is very interdependent upon a complex economic system, that complex economic system can collapse overnight. Right now, we are absolutely dependent upon electronic devices. You know, if you just see power blink off, people can't make change anymore. They can't buy stuff in the store. Refrigeration stops. Manufacturing stops. All these things stops. And the world that we know melts down. The elements of this world, this constitutional order and system of government, melt down. And we even call it a meltdown. Economic meltdown. And they are predicting it. Even without external forces working, you know, with the heavens on fire. You know, if you had a mega flare hit the earth, you could sit outside at night with no moon and read by the light coming from the sky. You know, when Caesar was in charge in Rome, I think it was Tiberius, this happened under Tiberius, there was at the time of Christ, there was major flares hitting the planet. And they evidently even altered the magnetic current of the planet, because people can go back and check stones that were burning, lava flows that took place like then and then at Pompeii, and they can measure the magnetic current of the earth at that given time, because we know when, you know, Vesuvius went off and Pompeii went off, because there's historical records of this. And so you take a look at the lava flows and you can measure the magnetic field. And there was a drastic change in the magnetic field of the earth at the time of Christ. And one of the things that was taking place was disturbances on the sun. And those disturbances on the sun caused the sky to glow so much you could actually read books outside at night by the aurora in the sky. It was so bright that Tiberius actually sent troops to the north to put out what he thought was fires burning and glowing in the night sky, so bright that they thought the entire north woods, you know, was on fire. And he dispatched troops to actually go up there and fight the fire. And of course, you'd have to go pretty far north, because you have to go clean to the sun, because that's where the fire was. These things happen. They affect a planet never before in our understanding of known history have we been so vulnerable to these natural changes that take place. So those rudiments may melt and the economies may collapse. And a lot of other things may collapse. And you need to have an alternative. But the elements of the world war against that alternative. No homeschooling. You know, they want you all plugged in. They actually have, there's a woman actually being fined and threatened with jail time because she wouldn't hook up electricity in her apartment. She had solar panels outside of her apartment door on the balcony, and she was filtering rainwater, and they didn't like that. They wanted her plugged in. And so anyway, the reality is that you need a comprehensive system, not complex, comprehensive system, that's an alternative system. And part of that will include the economy, and that's what we're going to be discussing the rest of this show and the next show and the next show, which will eventually be available in a series. But in Genesis 1:26, we see, "And God said, let us make man in our image, and after our likeness, let them have dominion over the fish and over the sea, of the sea, and the fowl of the air, and the cattle, and over the earth itself." over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. That dominion is capitalism. It's not a collective thing. It's an individual thing. In Genesis 2:15, which is the next chapter, it says, "And the Lord God took man and put him in the Garden of Eden," which we would have to explain what that Garden of Eden looked like. There's a lot of people adding to that picture. But he says to dress it and keep it. So that's part of our job description. We have dominion, and we're supposed to take care of what he gave us, and we're supposed to keep that dominion. But people give up that dominion, and they allow somebody else to create their economy. And so then you have another definition of economy. Economy is what we spend and save and what we buy and what we sell. That's a different definition of economy. But we do not buy everything with money. We buy into ideas. We spend our time seeking them, pursuing them, and following them. And Christ said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." And in that phrase, we find the concept of the economy of life. Because, see, the first capital is the sweat of your brow. It's your ability to work. And God gave that to you. And he says, don't muzzle the ox. So all your labor should belong to you, unless, of course, you choose to give it to somebody else. And, of course, you can sign contracts where you have to work for somebody else or be penalized. And you can do this as a social compact, or you can do it as an individual contract, like, you know, some of these ball players. You know, they talk about selling a ball player to another club. They actually buy and sell the players. Now, they actually don't have to go, but then they lose their contract. If they sell their contract, they have to go somewhere else, and those other guys will pay them. They don't want to work for those guys, but they won't get that money, and they can actually be fined. Now, the fact is, every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth is being bought and sold. You know, the traveling merchants of the earth, whatever that means, which we could explain to you in Revelations, have a full stock of all the stuff. They own all the stuff, and they even own the souls of men. That's amazing. So anyway, in absolute terms, a situation can be called economically efficient if, this is another definition, in order to help us learn how to measure economy, no one can be made better off without making someone else worse off, commonly referred to as Pareto efficiency. And this is a theory of economics, because that's not actually true. Because somebody could be made better off and everybody be made better off. And it happens every day. When a farmer plants grain into the ground and invests that grain and sweat into the ground, he may become better off. I mean, my great-grandfather retired at 45 as a grain farmer because he was so successful. And he put lots of kids through school, and he gave all kinds of money away. And he was farming with horses and mules and oxen. And he could retire at 45. I know people who farm with big, huge machinery, and they can't retire until almost the day they die. And then they still die in debt. Pareto efficiency, or what they call optimality, is a state of allocation of resources in which it is impossible to make one individual better off without making at least one individual worse off. And of course, that's absolutely ridiculous. There's farmland all over the country that is sitting fallow because nobody's working it. Nobody's taking care of it. There are resources that nobody's using, and they're going to waste. And we could use them without taking anything away from anybody else. But that's, you know, one of those theories of economy. So that's a false concept. But it's highly and well accepted amongst many economists. It goes on to say, this economical efficiency, no additional output can be obtained without increasing the amount of inputs. And what they're truly saying is that it is economically efficient because it is maxed out on improvements. And of course, that never exists. That never can exist. I'll give you an example. When people were finally getting steam engines to go up to 30 and 40 miles an hour, people thought that was just breakneck speeds. And they actually reached, you know, man-made vehicle got up to 60 miles an hour. And scientists were saying there can be no more improvements in science. We have reached the pinnacle of our accomplishments. Because they actually had a vehicle that went 60 miles an hour. Evidently, they hadn't driven in California yet. But the point is that there's always improvements. Did you want to say something, Cheryl?
Well, you know what? The board is lit up with callers. Are you up for taking a couple callers here in this last 10 minutes?
Sure.
My name's Dan. I'm here in Austin, Texas. I'll try to keep this real quick. I have a question about my mom. She's a high school teacher. This is a few years ago. She had a student, you know, average grades, but he was, you know, like star of the basketball team type, real basketball American. He graduated, joined the Army, and was sent to Iraq. He was stationed in a place called Habo, Iraq. There was a public pool there. There was a rumor going on that they had put some kind of disease in the water and was poisoning the citizens. So they were stationed there to guard it, to keep people out, trying to close it. And the mods came in and killed like half the guys. And this is one of her like favorite students she ever had. He was killed there. And now she's just become an alcohol. It's destroying her family. And I can't get her into church. I've tried over and over. She just won't listen.
Okay, did we just lose him? Seemed like he was in the middle of something. But anyway, okay, he's not. Okay, these are odd questions that are coming out. And, you know, I could probably help that lady on an individual basis. I'm not sure what I can do with telling this over the air. But there's lots of guilt and foundational problems with what we think is right. And these can eat away at us. And I could say something trite and simple, like she needs to forgive herself. Evidently, somehow or other, she's blaming herself for what happened to him. And she needs to not do that. She's playing, whenever you judge somebody and refuse to forgive them, including yourself, you're playing God. And it will trap you in a cycle that will bring you down to depression. Depression is one of the major causes of problems in America today. And it has to do with lack of forgiveness. But it also has to do with the fact that you don't have a real center to your life, something to stabilize yourself when bad things happen. And, you know, I can't give that to somebody over the air or an answer, but I can help people with that if they really want to find an answer on a case-by-case basis, which is why all of our congregations are meant to be small, intimate congregations, because many people will need other people to help them. You don't need just to go to a big emotional church and, you know, start, you know, reciting their senseless rituals. Those will charge you up emotionally. They will paint over the problem. And you may use them as a kind of a lifesaver temporarily, but they don't deal with the real underlying issues. As a matter of fact, most of them will magnify the effects of those issues for later in your life. Unless you either come to a realization, they will make it worse in the long run. Although you'll have a sense that somehow or other you dealt with it, but you've just learned how to sweep it under the rug. But again, you know, most of the real help that you can give somebody is not advice over the phone. It's about their personal introspection. If she was here, I could ask her questions and probably bring her around to this. We did this at the Burning Bush Festival, where we, you know, I could actually have one-on-one with certain people. I mean, there were other people in the room, but I could actually look into their eyes and converse, and I could bring out certain problems. And if they wanted to pursue it, especially if the other members of their family wanted to pursue it, we could tell where that problem comes from. With her, that this is probably awakened a trauma earlier in her life. And now she started this cycle, and she will return to depression unless you actually get to the cause. And the cause is not the death of that young man, but that is the trigger. The cause is actually much deeper. But anyway, do we have another, still somebody else online? I don't know where all these callers are coming from, but bring them on.
Okay, area code 615. We just have a few minutes left here in the program, so.
Yeah, this is Steve. I have a question for you. I've been struggling a little bit. I just want to ask you something. I mean, how do I gain God's forgiveness if I've been struggling with homosexual porn?
Well, there's many layers to this, and in 60 seconds, I'm not going to be able to do it. But I'd have to question you about earlier life and other experiences, but it has to do with forgiveness. All these compulsions in yourself, what draws you in a particular direction, has to do with forgiveness. And in order to bring you to that place, as a part of your mind that you don't want to go into, you don't want to look at, there's some sort of trauma there. And it has to do with probably some relative or friend or something that's happened to you or something that shocked you. May have nothing to do with sex, but it's bringing you back to that in these drives, this pulling. But if you start thinking about others more than yourself, start becoming a person of service and forgiveness, and you'll probably need help doing that, which is why we encourage people to form congregations, you can eventually come to face the source of this compulsion. And it will just fall away. It'll just absolutely disappear. We've seen this with people smoke compulsively, drank compulsively. When they finally came to the source, the real deep-seated thing that's inside them, the trauma that's inside them, and they forgave those individuals, the compulsion, the habit, just disappeared, just absolutely stopped. And there's no trying or effort. Just went away. But you often need help with that. And you need help from people who care about other, really care about other people enough to do work. But anyway, we're out of time. And so I'll have to say peace on everybody's house and bless you. And maybe we'll try this again sometime. We're going to start having more call-in shows in the network. Join the network and we'll see what we can do. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.